Crossroads East Dublin.
90.3.
This is Near FM. Now, regular contributor and great all-round guy when it comes to homeless and the homeless people and highlighting the issues surrounding homelessness is Brian McLaughlin, Head of Communications and Fundraising with the Inner City Helping Homeless. Brian, good morning. Welcome back to the programme.
Morning, Donny. How are you?
I am well. Brian, you have serious issues with the lifting of the ban on rent increases, and I think that we are talking about pretty substantial rent increases.
We are indeed, Donny. So I suppose the two big factors that we're very concerned about as a result of the restrictions and the guidelines being lifted from COVID-19 are the ban on evictions and also the ban on rent increases. The eviction ban was lifted already, which obviously means that we're going to see a huge influx of people becoming homeless for the first time from the private rental market over the remainder of the year. But as you say, the ban that was in place on increasing rents, they've now put it in place that people that are landlords, particularly in the rent pressure zones, can increase the rent by as much as 8% to cover the time frame that from last year where they weren't able to increase it by the usual 4%. So we're expecting to see a huge reaction to that. And there's a lot of people, as you know, struggling on PUP payments. The thing, I suppose, that really frustrates us is the state hasn't fully reopened yet. The economy hasn't reopened yet. There's a lot of people that are in hospitality or entertainment and different areas like that that still haven't gone back to work. So we should not be lifting these bans on evictions and bans on rent increases, because it's only going to perpetuate the problem, and we will see a tsunami of people come homeless in the remainder of the year.
Brian, you know as well as I do, the point that I have to put to you in this is that there are what I suppose might be described as accidental landlords, and I'm thinking particularly like of people who may have bought a house, oh, I don't know, 5-6 years, maybe more, 10 years ago, as an investment, sort of to help them along, or maybe as to boost their pension, maybe. And they are under pressure now as well, and they have to put their rents up. What would you say to people like that? I mean, the whole cuckoo fund rentals market, that's a totally different aspect altogether of the problem, but you know, the person who has maybe one house and they're struggling to meet the repayments on that because they can't get the rent out of it, etc. What do you say to people like that, Brian?
Oh, look, we have full sympathy for people like that. There is a lot of those types of landlords around the country at the moment. And like you said, we've come across people that might have bought a second home to put it towards their pension and retirement, and that they're renting it out to try and boost their pension, as you say, for when the time comes to retire from the workforce. So there are a lot of those people out there. And look, we're not tarring everybody with the same brush by any means. In fact, COVID-19 has highlighted how some of those type of landlords have really stepped up for their tenants. You know, they have told them, you know, don't worry about rent. We know you're not working. We know you're on a PUP payment. Don't worry about your rent. You're safe. Keep yourself in the accommodation that you're in. So there's a lot of those types of landlords out there without question that have gone above and beyond for their tenants over the last 18 months or so. As you said yourself, the biggest problem we have is the build-to-rent companies, the private rental companies that have come in. They're unscrupulous. They're there to make the maximum amount of profit. They don't care whether it's a family, whether someone has lost their job, you know, whether they're on a PUP payment. They're there to make money. And there's so many of these types of landlords coming into the country now through the REITs and the vultures. I prefer the term vulture to cuckoo myself, because I think that's what it is. They're coming into the country to pick on the scraps of our housing crisis and maximise their own profits. So without a doubt, I would differentiate between somebody that has a second property to try and boost their own income or their pension. Absolutely, there's a massive difference between the two.
Yeah, and I would say, Brian, as well, now, you would obviously know more about this than I would, but I would imagine that the type of person that I was alluding to, they're probably a sort of an easier person to deal with because, excuse me, they may have just the one or two properties and you are talking to an actual person. Whereas with the vulture funds, you're probably half the time talking to a computer.
Yeah, or a management company of some description, absolutely. You know, that's part of the problem. I think one of the biggest frustrations I have, and one of the things I like to highlight to people, is we have so many percentages and prices and all these different things when it comes to the housing crisis. If you strip all that back, if you've got investment fund managers in the US, in the Middle East, in Germany, you know, wherever it might be, that are getting clients coming into them with $1 million or $5 million or $10 million to invest, and these investment fund managers are telling them the best return for your money to make you the maximum amount of money and profit is for us to put the money into social housing or into the Irish housing market. That in itself is a massive red flag. It, you know, if people are being encouraged to make the most money, you come into the Irish housing market and that's where you'll make your money, then we've got serious, serious, serious problems in the country.
Now, you mentioned there, Brian, that there could be, and maybe, and quite possibly, a tsunami of evictions. Can you put a ballpark figure on what you mean by tsunami?
So I suppose there's multiple ways to look at it, Tony, in that regard. So obviously, number one, you're going to have a lot of people that could have been evicted or could have had their prices put up on their rent to a level they can't afford over the last 15 or 16 months. That didn't happen because the bans were in place. So they're all sitting there waiting to go. So there's going to be a huge influx of people that might have been evicted last year happening over the next 3 or 4 months. So we'd expect that the homeless figures are going to continue to rise, particularly over the remainder of the year. And I think what's also going to rise is we're going to see a lot more first-time homeless, people that have never been within homeless services before, they've never been in emergency accommodation before. And then the flip side of that also is we also have the mortgage issue hanging over our heads, where there's so many mortgages in arrears across the country. And those types of people will also be at risk because a lot of the vulture funds will come in, buy the properties up in bulk from the banks in some cases and evict the people into homelessness. They don't look at solutions like other organisations, like, for example, David Hall and iCare Housing, who buy the properties back from the bank and keep the family in it and work on a cost affordable rent to keep them in the property. So between the mortgage side of things and the evictions and the increases in rent, I think all of those are going to come together in a storm that's going to increase the homeless figures massively by the end of this year.
And that begs the question then, Brian, and my guest is Brian McLaughlin, Head of Communications and Fundraising with the Inner City Helping Homeless. Where are all these people going to go, Brian?
They're going to go into emergency accommodation, Donny, and that's the problem we have. Like, to give an example, like last Friday, the homeless figures for April were released, and we saw slight increases in the number of families and the number of children. So there's 925 families currently living in emergency accommodation, whether it's a hotel room, a bed and breakfast room, or a family hub. And those families have had, you know, we've all had a tough 15 months being locked down, staying indoors, not being able to see our family and friends. That was hard enough for people that lived in an apartment or a flat or a house, even with a garden. People found that tough. You can only imagine what that was like for a family of 3 or 4 who are living in one hotel room or one room in a bed and breakfast. You know, that's where these people are going to be pushed into. You know, they come and present for the first time as homeless. A lot of them are going to end up in emergency accommodation. So we're going to see, that's why we've seen so many, we've discussed it before, how many hotels have popped up around Dublin over the last few years. And I've probably said it to you before, but I'll go back to something that Leilana Farha, who was the UN Special Rapporteur for Housing, and she was in Dublin a couple of years back, and she made it very clear. She said there's a big problem in a city or in a country where people that are coming in on holidays are staying in houses and apartments through Airbnb, but then people who are from the country and become homeless are put into hotel rooms and bed and breakfast rooms, in some cases for as long as 18 months and 2 years. So that's what's going to happen. They're going to keep pushing these families into emergency accommodation. They're not getting solutions out there quick enough. And as long as they have this attitude with regard to the private rental companies, the REITs and the vulture funds, this problem is going to just continue to escalate.
And Brian, you said the figures were released there last week. What's the current total of homeless in the country as we speak?
So the current figure is 8,092. But again, that's the official figure, so that's the government figure. That wouldn't include people that are sleeping on the streets nightly. It wouldn't include families that are in women's aid shelters. It wouldn't include direct provision. It wouldn't include overcrowded family homes, and it wouldn't include couch surfers. So we peaked just over the 10,000 mark during Owen Murphy's reign. Why that came down is very simple. We had long called for a ban on evictions, that would have a huge impact on the housing crisis. We were consistently told that that wasn't constitutional. Then COVID-19 hit and the pandemic came into play, and they had to take the action that we had been asking for years. And immediately, as soon as they did that, every single month throughout last year, we saw a massive decline. So that was the solution to the housing crisis, to get the numbers down very quickly. Now that they've removed all those, all we're going to see is that going back up again. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, by this time next year, we're back near the 10,000 mark, because there's definitely going to be a huge influx of people that become evicted from the private rental market and from their homes due to mortgage arrears, particularly as people have lost their jobs and have had to live on PUP payments over the last year or so.
Are we going to have to wait a year to see it, Brian, or will we see it before the end of the year?
That's debatable. I wouldn't be shocked if by Christmas time we've hit that amount again. Now, we've only seen kind of slight increases over the last couple of months, but when we're really going to see an impact, I'd suspect, would be when we get the July, at the end of July, we'll get the figures for June. I think that would be a real gauge for how the rest of the year is going to play out on how much it's increased by. But we're definitely going to see that kick in as the year progresses. Now, we don't know what's going to happen with COVID-19. Hopefully everything remains open and we move forward from COVID-19, in which case those numbers will continue to rise. The only thing that would prevent those from rising would be if it's a case that they have to put under lockdown in place and they have to put the ban on evictions in place again, which I can't see happening. So we're definitely going to see a fallout as the year progresses.
Now, you mentioned the UN Special Rapporteur and her comments in relation to visitors, tourists to the country staying in houses, and people from the country, the indigenous population who become homeless staying in hotels, and how that is skewed.
Yeah.
I would also put it to you that a second sentence that could have been added to that is, when rent is more expensive than a mortgage, something is radically wrong.
I would go one step further, Donnie. I remember a time where, as you say, the mortgage was higher than people were paying on rent. Not only have rents exceeded mortgages, but they're way ahead of it. And I'll give you a couple of examples. So I have friends that bought homes in the mid-2000s in Lucan, where I'm from. And I speak to them and I know what they're paying back on their mortgages. And when I tell them how much a two-bedroom apartment is in city centre, nearly €2,000 on average, or in some cases €2,500, they're amazed, because it's double what they're paying for mortgages on actual family homes. So we're way past that at this stage. And I think that's one of the things that we consistently hear Minister O'Brien talk about, these solutions and these things that come into play. And one frustration we have is they love throwing out the term affordable without actually defining what affordable means. Affordable to me means it's built at the right price and it's given to the person, whether it's on social housing or on an affordable plan, at something they can afford based on their income. Unfortunately, the affordable definition by the minister and the department could mean, okay, we put a house up in Blackrock. Affordable in Blackrock might be €600,000. So by definition, it's affordable by that area's price range, but to the rest of us, it's not affordable. So that's the problem that we have. Like, we always feel that when affordability is taken into consideration, it should be based on means tested on an income, because if people are paying 60% of their take-home salary on their rent, there's something very wrong. I mean, there's no way that that's how it should be. The state should be stepping in and supporting people with not only social housing, which we all talk about over and over again because the social housing waiting lists are very high, but also people that need affordable rents or affordable purchases. And that's the state's job to provide that. But unfortunately, they have outsourced that to the private developers, to the private landlords, and to the vultures and the cuckoos and the REITs. And, you know, by not taking responsibility to build themselves, using a model similar to O'Coolan, who have done it in Ballymun, they've shown how it can be done at the right price, and they continue to ignore those solutions. And I'll go one step further. We were on a webinar with O'Coolan Housing, Hugh from O'Coolan Housing, a few months back, and he put it very straightforward, and he said, you know, over the course of a year, the government is going to spend approximately €1 billion on HAP supports for people that are being pushed out of, you know, homelessness into the rental market, or who are on the social housing list and have been moved into the private rental market. And his attitude was, the government spend €1 billion this year that goes into landlords' pockets. He said, if the government gave me €1 billion and a site like Old Ebony or Oscar Traynor or somewhere like that, he said, if they gave me €1 billion, and the public land that we have, he said, the banks are there, the state own it, so it's there to be used. He said, if they gave me that, he said, in 10 years' time, I could hand them back not only the billion they gave me, but 500 million profit for them, And I could also build thousands of houses in that 10-year period. So the solutions are there. They've been told over and over again what the solutions are. They're choosing to bury their heads in the sand and ignore it.
Yeah, well, I spoke to Hugh from O'Coolan Housing, and they are doing absolutely tremendous work, and I would encourage anybody to go onto their website and see what they're doing. And in fact, it has been copied in a couple of different places, I think, around the country at this stage. But I remember Hugh telling me that
they have really set a benchmark on solutions. But whether it's OICHH and ourselves that are pushing it, whether it's O'Coolan themselves, whether it's the National Homeless and Housing Coalition that we're on, or the Raise the Roof campaign, all of these solutions have been given over and over again to Owen Murphy previously and to Dara O'Brien now. They're just choosing not to listen.
Your friend, because I know he is a friend of yours, Dr. Rory Hearn from Maynooth University, he published some very, very interesting stuff lately in relation to the housing crisis. And again, presented some, I thought, very common sense and practical solutions. Like, as you said, the solutions are there. But Rory Hearn, who, no disrespect to you, Brian, but, I mean, is eminently qualified to talk about it from every angle. He reckons that, if I could maybe parcel up what he said, that if you think what we've seen so far in relation to homelessness and the housing crisis is bad, if these policies are continued with, it's going to be a lot worse.
No question. And I think Rory has done incredible work for 10 years on this subject. And it was kind of one of those things that became the perfect storm a few weeks back, where Rory has been saying all of these things previously. He brought out a book called Housing Shock about the funds and the solutions to the housing crisis previously. But that particular week was like a perfect storm, because Rory's had an incredible article up in the Journal. Prime time covered what was going on in Mullen Park and Maynooth with regards to the funds buying phase 2 and phase 3 off the plans for a new development that should be there for locals to get on the market for the first time.
And I think in Tyrrellstown as well, the same week, you had a similar situation.
That's right, Hollystown. Yeah, so that was happening over and over again. In fact, we saw a similar one, and in that case, I think in Hollystown, it was a German investment fund. So when they're buying off the plans for developments that, I think in the Hollystown one, some of the phases won't even be completed till 2025. So they're buying them now off the plans. But those houses actually won't be ready for another 4 years, which is why we needed action immediately, because even a action taken immediately, we would still have the fallout of what's happened in the policies for the last year and a half going on until 2025 and beyond, because a lot of the planning permissions will be in already. But I think Rory has really hit the ground running with this, because what had happened is when he did his article in the Journal and he started making TV appearances, a lot of people started reaching out to him with their stories, and some of the stories will really surprise you. Like, a lot of people who are working, trying to get on the ladder for the first time, who are paying extortionate rents, who are working a full-time job at a decent enough salary but haven't got a hope of ever saving a deposit for a house because they're in the private rental sector and they can't get out of it. So I think Rory has really come to the forefront in the last couple of weeks. And actually, there's something that's really important taking place this week. On Thursday in the Dáil, People Before Profit have a bill in regarding inserting a right to housing into the Constitution, which is something that Rory, ourselves, everyone has been pushing for a long time. So it just happened by chance that it's fallen this week. So that's something for everybody to keep an eye on, because we feel that particularly every single opposition party, everyone has been very outspoken on the housing crisis, the people that are contacting them. So it's kind of put up or shut up time. This is a chance to debate and put a bill in place that will bring us to the polls down the line for a right to housing into the Constitution. So it's something that everyone should keep an eye on this week, because it will be very important.
Well, in relation to that, just coming up after 12 o'clock, I'm not sure if you heard my call over, Brian, when I was starting the programme at the top of the hour. But just after 12 o'clock, I'll be chatting to Councillor Janice Boylan, who will be telling us how it has emerged that none of the 1,047 homes planned for in the site at O'Devney Gardens will be protected by the new planning rules to protect the homes from investment companies coming in and buying them up. So, I mean, there's another 100 or 1,047 houses that are going to go to these funds. Brian, before I let
you... And, you know, Donny, something on that, Donny, sorry to cut across, just a quick one on it, but very quickly on that, that's again something that we have to be aware of. When you hear Minister O'Brien stand in front of a camera and say that he's doing X solutions, none of them are done retrospectively. So whether it was banning on co-living, which he said, oh, we're banning it in a month's time, which gave that ample opportunity for any of these funds to get in with their permissions in before the ban came into place. Similarly enough, that's what we're seeing now. Any actions taken on public lands that have already been approved previously, they won't retrospectively take any action on it. So that's where we need to be firm now, get immediate action in place. And we'd have liked to have seen if they went back retrospectively for 2 years and said, actually, you know what, we're not going to allow that now. That was then, this is now, things have changed. The housing crisis has escalated further. We're not going to go down that road. But what they do is they give them that little loophole of a couple of weeks to get their applications in. And then it's very easy to say, well, anyone that has it in by this date, we can't do anything about it. But any future ones, we can do something about. So again, the devil's in the detail when it comes to what you hear from the minister and the government.
Well, Brian, I've lost count of the amount of times we've spoken over the last, God knows, it must be 5 or 6 years now we're talking about this, and based on our chat this morning, my friend, I think we're going to be talking a lot in the years to come. Brian McLaughlin, Head of Communications and Fundraising with the Inner City Helping Homeless. Brian, thank you so much for joining me this morning. And before we part company, I note that fundraising has been added to your title, so just for anybody with a spare few bob or something to donate, just let us know how they can do it, please.
Absolutely. They can go to our website, which is www.ichh.ie, which shows them all the work we do and the appeals that we're doing at present, or they can contact our office on 01888 1804 for more details, and any support is appreciated.
As I said, Brian McLaughlin, Head of Communications and Fundraising with the Inner City Helping Homeless. Brian, thank you so much for joining me this morning. And look, all I can do is thank you and wish you continued luck with the work you're doing, because it is so, so badly needed. Brian, lovely to talk to you again.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thanks. Take bye-bye. Care. Bye-bye.
Across Northeast Dublin.
90.3.
This is Near FM.